This episode of GameScoop is sponsored by Squarespace. If you're looking for a way to make your business stand out and succeed online, Squarespace is the all-in-one website platform for you. They take the stress out of creating an awesome website, engaging with your audience, and selling anything from products to content to time, so you're able to focus on, you know, everything else. In other words, you'll have more time for gaming. With the new guided design system, you can choose from curated layouts and styling options to build a unique online presence from the ground up, optimized for every device. And with Squarespace's integrated, optimized SEO tools, you'll show up more often to more people. Squarespace doesn't just make things easier for you. Checkout for your customers is made seamless with simple but powerful payment tools that allow you to accept credit cards, PayPal, and Apple Pay, and in eligible countries, offer the option to buy now and pay later with Afterpay and Clearpay. So whether you're just starting out or looking to expand your existing brand, be sure to visit squarespace.com for a free trial, and when you're ready to launch, go to squarespace.com/gamescoop to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. That's squarespace.com/gamescoop for 10% off. You know, when it comes to wireless carriers, sometimes what you see isn't always what you get. Except with Visible. With Visible, what you see is exactly what you get. If you haven't heard of Visible, well, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. With Visible, there are no hidden fees, no fine print, no hassle, nothing to hide. It's just $25 a month, all taxes and fees included. And you don't need more than one line of wireless to save. You can save on a line all to yourself with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. And again, just $25 a month. The future of wireless is here, and it is transparent. If you want more transparency in your wireless plan, you want to be on the Visible plan. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. That's Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
IGN GameScoop.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to IGN GameScoop. I'm your host, Damon Hatfield. Joining me this week is Justin Davis.
Scoop.
Andrew Goldfarb.
Scoop.
Jared Petty.
Sam Claiborne and Absentia. Scoop!
Yeah. We've got a gross show for you this week. We're going to be talking a little bit more about the Nintendo Switch. We're going to be talking a little bit about that Skyrim Special Edition coming out this Friday. But first...
Whoa.
Red Dead Redemption 2 revealed last week, right? That was just a week ago?
Yep.
Please don't kick the furniture, Jared.
It's a very valuable table.
It is. It's precious. It's a member of the cast.
Red Dead Redemption 2 revealed last week, and we've got another one of those crazy fan theories.
Theories that we
all know and
love. It's my favorite kind of fan theories.
Ben Affleck isn't actually Bruce Wayne.
Oh, man, that one was so good. I wish that one was true. Where the Batman v Superman is because it was the fifth movie in the series.
This one comes from Robert. And he has a theory about the release window for Red Dead Redemption 2, which is supposedly fall 2017. Mm-hmm. So he says, Rockstar released a less than exhilarating trailer last week, announcing a Red Dead Redemption 2 to be released fall 2017, a whole year in advance. Seems a little exhausting on fans and does little to entice anyone new, supposedly. Now, to the point, this had me speculating. What if Rockstar is pulling the ultimate move, announcing the game to be released deliberately later than intended, only to surprise release it for summer 17. What would be your immediate reaction to this? And do you think such a move could be a slam dunk? You heard it from me first.
Well, I appreciate the creative thinking. I don't think that's going to happen.
No. From Robert.
Robert, yeah, I appreciate your enthusiasm, Robert. I don't know where to start.
Every retailer would be so mad.
So they had to line this up with retailers.
Sega did something like this in 1995 when they launched the Saturn. They stealth. They're like they're at E3 and they're like the Sega Saturn. It's coming out in a couple of months. We've been talking. Oh wait, no, it's in stores right now, but only select retailers. Walmart, you're not one of them. That'll be good for our relationship.
They're
not going to do that. It's a year ahead. This is not out of line at all. We've had plenty of announcements this early or much earlier. Rockstar can take their time. They have the scale in their marketplace to do what they want. They sold approximately 6 copies of Grand Theft Auto V for every man, woman, and child on Earth already.
That math checks out.
Yeah, yep. And I mean, they really, you know, it's one of the best-selling video games in the history of the universe.
It was one of the best-selling video games last month.
Yeah,
seriously.
And,
GTA V was out September 2013,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
And that one, when it was revealed. revealed? Was it a year ahead?
Well, it was delayed.
It was delayed. Yeah, I think that's pretty much every recent Rockstar game has been at least slightly delayed.
So that's what I think is going on. I think Red Dead Redemption 2 is probably almost done, or in their minds, like, this game's almost done. We think it'll be ready in the spring. We think it'll be ready in the summer. But maybe they've learned from their previous history, and they just say, look, even though, you know, our own internal milestones or whatever put the game being finished in the summer, we know how we work. We know our games are big and complex. So rather than announce a release date and then delay it, I think they gave themselves so much padding.
I feel like that's why they waited so long, because like the rumors about Red Dead 2 have been going on for like years. And so, yeah, I think at this point, like, I'm hoping they finally learned from it. Also, with the marketing of this game, like, they're airing TV spots during, like, Sunday Night Football. And during,
Are they already airing TV spots?
Yeah, it's, like, not only just airing TV spots, but during, like, major sporting events. Yeah. And so, and, like, during The Walking Dead, like, there have been a ton on TV. So I feel like
they're trying
to make it mainstream, they definitely don't want to delay.
Well, like, exactly right. They're growing Red Dead. I mean, Red Dead was a massive hit and a huge, you know, critical success, one of the best games ever made, a lot of people kind of believe now. But it's not been a success. Like, it's not a 20 million selling Grand Theft Auto style franchise. So announce the game, launch trailers. There's probably going to be a steady stream of information and marketing behind this game for the next 12 months, building up to what they hope will be another GTA size launch for them, I think.
Yeah. Now, I will say, when they were teasing it last week, I expected summer. I did think they were going to do, like, the six-month kind of... Like, I didn't think they would be this fall, because that would be insane.
If it's fall, I guess it could be another September release, right?
Yeah.
Fall. I wish somebody... It'll never happen for a variety of reasons, but, one of my dreams that I hope happens in my time where I cover the video game industry is that just one day you reload the Steam store, it just says Half-Life 3, $60.
Yeah.
I think that's not impossible.
No, they could do that one day. Just we wake up and it happens. It would be
such bad news for us.
It would be a joke of Kojima-esque proportions. Yeah. I mean, nobody has pulled a Metal Gear Solid 2 since Metal Gear Solid 2. That would be truly beautiful.
What was the Metal Gear Solid 2?
The fact that Metal Gear Solid 2's marketing campaign in the United States sold a very different experience than what fell into players' hands. That was a game about misinformation, and its marketing campaign, in a very meta way, reflected that. You're getting a game about this. No, actually, it's about this, which was also the theme of the game. I think it was Scott Sharkey who said it was a joke of Andy Kaufman-esque proportions.
Wow.
Very appropriate. And I agree with that sentiment. Nobody's really done anything like that since. So yes, Half-Life 3 on Steam, do it. I'll take it, please.
The other thing about this is something like this possible, Robert? Yeah, it's possible, but it becomes less possible the more time that passes. You know, like, retailers need the heads up and need to get the little cardboard displays, and the business relationships fall into place, and the shipping, you know, the pre-orders fall into place.
And also financially, like, fiscal calendar wise, like, that would put it in a different quarter, so, like, investors would need to know about it ahead of time.
So if they were to surprise launch it early, there'd be too many signals for them to be able to do it completely stealthily.
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy that it's so rare now to have something not leak.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, because, like, even, like we all knew this was coming eventually. I don't think it's a surprise to anyone that Red Dead's being made. I do think it's interesting that, like, the timing of it didn't get out. Because, there's so many times that we find out about games from, like, a poster at GameStop. Like, that was, like, the big Final Fantasy 15 delay. Mm-hmm. Like, all of that stuff tends to come from the retail chain because they have to let them know early.
Well, it's like the way that games work. Like, the vast majority, almost all the voice acting was probably recorded 18 months to 2 years ago. I mean, we don't know. That's a guess on my part. But it happens early-ish in the process. All those actors, all those contractors, all those people that, I mean, if that game's been in development for 5+ years, how much turnover has there been on the staff, people that have left, and don't work there anymore? It's unbelievable.
That's why I don't know if you've been following the voice actor strike, but I was reading up on that, and apparently, like, very, very often, actors don't even know what game they're working on.
Wow.
They're recording, you know, very far out, very early ahead of time, and they're not even told what the game is for fear of that leaking out.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose if they follow the games industry, they could put AMD together, maybe, but it's still, like, can you imagine, like, it sounds terrible.
It's weird that, like, not a ton is leaked. Like, I guess Three Dog, the guy who plays Three Dog in Fallout, kind of outed Fallout 4, but, like, beyond that, I don't remember a lot of big voice actors.
We knew about Boston, I think because people had seen Bethesda filming and taking photos of the city years ago.
Yeah, and then Kotaku got the script pages, but that was like 6 months later.
It's also, I'm a little ambivalent. Like, on the one hand, that really sucks. Like, you don't want to have something sneak out that way. But on the other hand, knowing, the next Fallout's probably in Boston based off this leak, it's like, well, okay, see you in 3 years where that means something to me. Like, I don't know how I feel about stuff like that.
It's an interesting theory, Robert, but I would wager that Rockstar is being upfront about their plans to release Red Dead Redemption 2 in fall 2017. Moving on to Nintendo Switch. Mm-hmm. This week we've got a few more details. We learned it is not backwards compatible with physical 3DS or Wii U games.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
My question to you guys is, do you care?
No, I don't. I have my 3DS still. It's a contemporary supported platform, so I'm not particularly worried about that. If they drop support for 3DS in the wake of this, I might get grumpier about it, but not much, because it's not like it's hard to buy a 3DS. It's an inexpensive, durable, capable system, especially in its 2DS iteration. Yeah. So that's fine by me. And as for Wii U backward compatibility, there are a handful of Wii U games that I love, but I didn't want to see them handcuffed to that weird proprietary legacy hardware format that went into the Wii U. Mm-hmm. So in this case, while I'm usually very concerned about backward compatibility, I'm willing to give them a pass because of those unique hardware situations.
And we should also clarify, one of the things they said alongside this was that the system doesn't allow you to use the tablet and the TV at the same time. So you don't even have like that second screen functionality.
Yeah, like, they're completely, the sort of unstated story is that two-screen gaming is kind of dead. Like it had its era and it's ending next March.
Yeah.
I don't really care that. I kind of agree with Jared, at least as far as the physical stuff. And even in terms of Wii U and 3DS games, it really bums me out that this is, I'm assuming, and we don't know obviously, but I'm assuming it's going to be the third generation in a row where these Nintendo games I bought digitally are not going to transfer over and I'm going to end up buying them again on Virtual Console.
Yeah, it's insane.
And like, it's my own fault for spending the money over and over again, but like, I'm hoping this is finally the time they get the unified account stuff right so that whatever they do after the Switch someday, like I hope your digital library finally stays with you.
That's gonna be scary for Nintendo though, right?
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure, yeah.
I'm actually gonna miss my Wii backwards compatibility library more than my Wii U. I mean, there have been a handful of really wonderful Wii U games that I've enjoyed, Super Mario Maker in particular, but I actually am gonna have to probably keep my Wii U plugged in because I still get my Wii games out every now and then and play them. And that's gonna be more of a punch in the gut, I think, than the Wii U, because it's a larger, more robust library of games I actually still wanna play. Mm-hmm.
I think we'll get some ports too. Like, I really do. Like, that was the rumor leading up.
Oh, yeah,
to
they'll
it.
All be available. There'll be a digital Wii U shop. And
well,
stuff
not
like
even
that.
Just that, but like literally natively for NX, like do a Smash port and do a Splatoon port.
Well, they never did a Galaxy HD version, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like, I would love to finally get that.
Yeah. Backwards compatibility is one of those features that everyone says they really want, but then don't really use. Like people's outward, like how important is this to you? People say it's very important, but then that doesn't match up with they've done studies and stuff on like what do you use your console for? You know, Netflix, current gen games, last gen games, and people don't use it. Like Jared is the exception. Like,
yeah, I really am the exception.
People want, you know, when the new generation comes out and you have when the PS4 is no longer the thing, when the PS5 is coming out, like it doesn't take you long at all to not care about those PS4 games anymore. Yeah, like I don't care about all my PS3 games are in a closet and like I don't really care that much about them anymore.
Yeah, like it's nice that they added backwards compatibility to the Xbox One.
Yeah, but sometimes they did it in such a smart way.
They did, and it's cool. And I look at my games that are like available to download, but I'm like,
available to download makes me say, yeah, sure. Like, I downloaded A Kingdom for Keflings just because I'm like, sure, why not? But I'm never going to, I mean, that was a digital game, but I'm never going to dig that game out of my closet. But when I see it in front of me in my game library, like, I'm much more likely to download and reinstall, you know, Clone and Clyde.
I feel like Microsoft didn't get enough credit for how consumer-friendly that is. Because, like, Microsoft could have done what Sony's doing and charged for that. Like, they could have done, like, Sony is selling PS2 games on PS4 and you buy them and they have trophies. And they're up-resed a little bit, but like, it's really cool that Microsoft is just like, hey, those games that you have work.
And like, more and more keep appearing.
I keep up that list for IGN, and there's well over 250 backward compatible Xbox games now that work on the Xbox One. And
no Mark of the Ninja though.
Huh? No Mark of the Ninja. No, there's several. That's it. Every week I'm checking for Radiant Silvergun and Guardian Heroes.
When
those two are on there.
Catherine up there.
Catherine would be nice too. Yeah, and Mark of the Ninja. There's still some, you know, glaring omissions, which I'm scared about because a lot of these are live arcade games that I wonder if anybody's ever gonna bother to do the backward compatibility support on. Yeah. And some of those, that's as much as I love Xbox 360 tentpole stuff, it was that Xbox Live Arcade stuff that really drew me to the platform.
Me too.
And I'd love to be able to play some of that stuff again.
Yeah, with Switch, it's really interesting that, like, I assume they'll have some kind of, like, kind of like they're doing now on Wii U, you can buy Wii games from Virtual Console. I assume some Wii U games will make their way either as like native like cartridges you can buy, or they'll have some kind of virtual console backwards compatibility. But like without a second screen, some Wii U games just straight up won't work.
Yeah,
and it's not like a ton of them. Yeah. But
motion control games.
Like Star Fox won't work. You can't, like, Splatoon, really, you can play without motion controls, but it super relies on them.
Yep. Yeah, well, I wrote an op-ed about that.
I'm really Zombie U, Tokyo Mirage Sessions.
Yeah, I'm glad Super Mario Maker's coming to 3DS, because that at least will, that'll take some of the punch out of that, because I think that's probably the one that's going to be most directly affected by this. And it is, in my opinion, the best game on the platform. I'd really hate for that game to be lost to history, but apparently a lot of the sharing functionality is going to be lost in this version, and that worries me. It makes me a little sad.
Yeah, the online stuff is a little limited. I mean, I think there were a lot of people, like Tom Phillips from Eurogamer, and Laura Kate Dale, Emily Rogers, like there were people who nailed aspects of this console ahead of launch, and they were right. Or ahead of announcement, and like they've been saying for a while that like Splatoon, Mario Maker, a couple others will get NX versions, and like that sounds right.
Yeah, I mean they featured Splatoon in their reveal video, right?
Yeah, and Mario Kart 2, they seem to like they're probably not full new games, but maybe that's like in the NX version you get an extra mode or an extra.
Well, I mean Splatoon is kind of an that's a huge deal. Nintendo made a new ridiculously successful franchise on a ridiculously unsuccessful piece of hardware. I mean, the Splatoon is so much fun that it works despite the Wii U being a Frankensteinian nightmare in many ways. And
maybe a little harsh. Yeah.
Oh, I love my Wii U, but it's a mess, man. The thing's a mess. I love it, but oh, it's oh yeah. Not since the Saturn. But anyway, Splatoon. They're going to ride that. I mean, that's going to be a game that becomes a franchise for them. Splatoon is one of the best things to happen in the last generation of gaming. I'm really excited to see Nintendo using new ideas like that.
Upgrade program if you own the previous version. Like, can you get the NX version for like $20 or $30, or do you have to spend the $60 again?
I mean, I don't know. I wonder. Like, honestly, I really do wonder what that'll mean, because Club Nintendo died and they made this My Nintendo, which does plug into Miitomo, and it does hopefully tie into whatever the account system will be on Switch, and
that's why DNA is on the list.
Exactly.
If history tells us anything, no.
That's one of those, like, that to me, that like is as big of a question to me as price and battery life, is like, what are they going to do with the account system? Because like I registered so many games that I bought over the years, and for Club Nintendo, like that's dead. That doesn't matter anymore. But like, I'm hoping somehow the new system ties in.
Yeah, I agree.
I'm gonna go out on a limb on this. I really do think if I were them, it would be $250 and Mario would be in the box. I feel like they need to garner some goodwill.
No, I feel like Mario can't possibly be a launch title.
I don't think Mario will be in the box either.
You put Mario in the box and it's $250.
Oof. Yeah. I really wonder what the launch lineup
sounds
would be.
Great.
No, I mean selling Mario separately. They know every single person that buys the console is going to buy Mario, and so that makes the that stealthily makes the console $50 or $60 more dollars expensive than what the MSRP is.
I think maybe what you get as a pack-in is what we're talking about, like those Wii U ports. Like maybe as a pack-in, you can get Mario Kart and Splatoon. Switch.
But again, I don't want a port. I want something new. I want something to sell me on this sucker. And that's
all I need is Super Nintendo Remix.
Yeah, seriously.
And then I'm so happy.
Yeah, that'd Super great, Nintendo Remix would be bodacious.
Or Game Boy Remix. Cool. Any of that.
Yeah, for sure. Virtual Boy Remix. let's check in with the listeners.
Hey, listeners.
Listeners, remember you can always reach us at the email address gamescoop@ign.com, just like SilverBullet79.
Ooh, whoa. Watch out, werewolves.
Right. He says, hi, Damon and Scoop team. Long time, first time. With Skyrim Special Edition coming out this week, all the focus seems to be on console mod support. While I do think that's a really cool feature, I feel like I'm one of the only ones who's still bothered by the lack of a save transfer feature for consoles. I've invested a significant amount of time into the 360 version of Skyrim. I'm still nowhere near completing it. I'd love to continue exploring this world on the Xbox One with its new visuals and features, but find myself not wanting to purchase this version of the game simply because I don't want to have to start everything over. At this point, I'd much rather have a backwards compatible Skyrim, just so I can continue to play my save on the Xbox One with its console-specific features, but I know that's never coming. I hear some people say that a save transfer feature would be difficult to do, seeing as how these two versions of the game exist on different generations of hardware. But it feels like Bethesda is dropping the ball, especially when you consider that the Behemoth was able to successfully achieve this exact scenario with Castle Crashers.
Really?
I don't remember that happening.
Well, and full disclosure, I used to work at Gearbox, but while I was there, we launched Borderlands Enhancement Collection, and it does that within console families. I think the thing that's
Xbox to Xbox,
never going to happen is going to be 360 to PS4. Yeah.
It is possible. But he says, how do you guys feel about the lack of this feature? Has it affected your decision in purchasing this edition? I know that for me, it is the only reason I won't be picking up Skyrim Special Edition.
I'm sympathetic to that perspective.
Yeah, me too. I mean, I think that's like the biggest, like there are a lot of people in the office who, like Zach Ryan put a ton of time into Skyrim, but he's like, I want to start over. And like, I agree with that. Like, I think it's hard.
I actually do want to start over, and that's why I'm looking forward to just starting over Skyrim. Because I played it at launch, and I put a lot of time into it, but I never finished it. I never played any of the the DLC, and I feel like they've updated it and fixed some issues. So I'm just looking forward to like starting a whole new game.
We also, mods, I feel like sometimes people, he says he doesn't care about mods. Mods sometimes get a bad rap, or not a bad rap, but the picture of mods are, I'm going to turn every dragon into Thomas the Train. But like, mods don't need to be like that. Like, one of the most underrated Skyrim mods is, I think it's called Live Another Life or something like that. And basically it changes the opening, you know, the opening hour of the game, you're a prisoner and then a dragon attacks and they force you to go through this stuff. And there's like alternate starts where like you can start on the western side of the map in Markarth and your character has like a different background and then you're just plopped in this world in a different area. Like
the loading screen one is really cool.
Yeah, the ones that removes the loading screen from the cities.
Yeah, that's crazy. Yeah, why couldn't you do this, Bethesda?
Yeah, exactly.
And so stuff like that, I think, what was my point? Oh, that I don't want to go through this all again, but I feel like, you know, install a couple mods that change the way the game plays, not in significant ways, but just, you know, again, starts you on the western side of the map or something, and you'll stumble on, you know, you'll have 50 hours of gameplay over there that don't even really overlap with probably how you played the game the first time around.
Yeah, I feel like it's, for me, like, it was a bigger problem when we were really close. Like, I think, like, when Last of Us Remastered or Tomb Raider Remastered launched, like, they were close enough to the last-gen versions that you might have started and never finished, and I don't think I would want to play the whole first half of The Last of Us again if I hadn't finished it. Mm-hmm. Whereas, like, I guess for Skyrim, like, yeah, I guess that's a really good point that they have changed it enough, and it's been, what, 5 years since that game came out, that, like, I guess it does kind of make sense.
Well, let's be honest, no one sitting in this room has any idea of the technical implications of, like, how easy or hard it is to do something like that. Like, I don't even know, like, where we even start. I always roll my eyes, like Bethesda has a launcher now, like they have this card game, they have the Elder Scrolls Legends, and I'm like, oh, I'll download the Elder Scrolls Legends card game. They're like, you can get it with the Bethesda launcher, and you can launch all our games from this launcher, and sign up for a Bethesda account, and Mafia 3 is like, sign up for a 2K account, and Ubisoft killed Uplay, but they really just changed the name of it. They didn't kill Uplay, and it's like,
that
stuff's the worst, but it does open the door for start a game one place, pick up that game somewhere else. Mm-hmm. Like, Elder Scrolls Legends will probably be on tablet someday, and you'll have, you know, one account that you take from computer to mobile.
Soon.
Like, Blizzard was way ahead of the curve on that, you know, with games like Hearthstone and BattleNet.
Yeah.
They
recently changed the name of BattleNet.
Yeah, it's not BattleNet anymore.
They just changed it to, like, Blizzard, I think.
It's like Blizzard Tech.
The Blizzard Launcher or something like that.
A little tiny piece of me died in something.
Yeah, I have so many, like, BattleNet was the first online game experience I ever had, but to be fair, I don't know, just call it Blizzard, like, it's fine.
Oh, yeah, it's fine. Sense. I was just sad about it in a very stupid way.
I think, like, stuff like this is funny because, like, I mean, we talk about Nintendo Switch. Like, I feel like little things that I've always said I want to do, I'm hoping that we're getting into the time where it is start one place, play somewhere else. Like, I really would love if there was a world where, like, if you have an EA account, you can start a game on PS4 and maybe you can continue on Xbox One.
Yep.
Like, I think, like, Skylanders do that, like, physically. Like, you can work on a character, save it to the actual figure, and then bring that figure to a friend's house, and it's still your level and your character.
I want to live in a world where there's a constitutional amendment against publisher-managed accounts that I have to log into every game I play.
But that's where it gets
It sucks that it has to be tied to, like, I don't want to fire up Mafia 3 and be pestered to sign up for a 2K account for whatever garbage benefit that gives you. Mm-hmm. But like, the trade-off of, like, being able to take that game save and play wherever is appealing to me.
Yeah.
The candidate that gets my vote is the one who outlaws it.
Yeah. Does anyone else... I played so many hours of Skyrim on console, and, like, it took me, like, 20 hours before I realized I didn't really like the character I'd made. Mm. Like, I wasn't that interested in, like, destruction magic. And, like, but it doesn't happen all at once. It's not like, oh, I don't like my character. It's just, like, this creeping feeling of, like, I don't really love this character class, but I'm already committed to it, so I guess I'll stick with it. And it gets stronger and stronger until I'm just like, well, shit. Like, I don't like what I did here. And, like, I just wish they gave you one, like, reset, like one, like limit it in whatever way they need to limit it to not be overpowered.
Some games have built that in where you can like go visit a witch doctor and they can transform you to a new
class. Yeah. Right? Yeah, Torchlight made me so happy with that.
And that's very baked into Diablo 3. But in a game like Skyrim, so then I did play that. I played that game on console and I played it on PC and made an archer and had so much more fun. Mm-hmm. And it's like it's actually causing me so much anxiety and stress, like. Like, I'm playing World of Warcraft right now, and the 10 or 12 or however many classes in that game play radically different from one another. And that's a commitment of, like, hundreds of hours, and you don't know ahead of time what you're going to get. They do let you preview a class and do some stuff now, but that wasn't in the game when I started.
Justin, did you play Tactics over Let Us Cling Together for PSP?
No.
Okay, that game did something I don't think I've ever seen another game do, and I loved it. It's this long, story-driven RPG with lots and lots of choices that make huge difference in what parts of the game you see. But when you got to the end, it opened up this node system where they showed you a map of every choice you'd ever made and said, instead of replaying anything, just pick a new node where you made a decision and follow the path down a different road, get all the content you missed from that path. Then when you finish again, go back, here's everything you've done so far. You didn't repeat a single thing, and you got to experience everything the game had to offer.
Really smart. That's
really
cool.
So
that's
great. Really
smart. You'll have to keep World of Warcraft classes in mind in your new Let's Play series.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Thank you, Andrew. We'll get back to that.
Speaking of Let's Play series, I checked earlier, Damon, and Holy Chip is a mere 3,400.
3,400, wow. Ooh.
So if you go and watch Holy Chip yet again.
can we just go to incognito mode and refresh it?
I don't know.
Go to your local library, look up Holy Chip on YouTube on every single one of the computers. Yeah. And once it gets to 15,000.
It's been so long, I don't remember what we played. It was Aero Blasters.
And I think
Air Zonk is next, ooh, that's right. We have a long list of games we'd like to get through, and we figured it out.
Are you
going
alphabetically?
Alphabetically through all the turbo chips.
There's only like 100 of them.
Yeah, they didn't release a lot of games of the United States. So that
Helps. All right, moving on. This is Steven Santana.
Oh, I know Steven.
Yeah, friend of the show. He says, Scoop, I currently have a bet going between myself and a friend that the NES Mini will sell more units in its first month compared to PlayStation VR's first month. Okay. My reasoning is the NES Mini is cheap, plays on nostalgia, consumers know what they're getting, PSVR is expensive, it's new technology.
Well, first of all, Steven, gambling is illegal, so we have no, I'm forced.
And we're all cops.
I'm forced to turn you into the local authorities.
Yeah.
So,
we don't know where he lives. Maybe it's,
I do know, I think he lives in Vegas, so.
Ah, there we go. Oh.
I think it would be outrageous and unbelievably surprising if that weren't the case. Yeah. I think if PSVR outsold NES Classic, it would be a gigantic news story. NES Classic is $60. It's basically made to be an impulse buy. Like, if they're doing it right, this will be at Safeway and Walgreens, and you'll be able to get this just like while you're getting groceries. It's a stocking stuffer. Like, whereas PSVR is like a major commitment. Like, that's like it's like buying a new console. Yeah, so I don't know. I feel like I totally think NES Classic will far outsell PS4.
The better question would be which earns more revenue monthly.
Yeah. But he's talking about the first month. Because, you know, the NES Mini will be an impulse buy like over time, right? Yeah. As you're just waiting in line at the checkout.
The problem will be that Nintendo's not going to make enough of the damn things available because you can't even pre-order it.
Right, that's the big caveat. This is assuming full availability in my eyes.
Yeah. But if there is full availability, I mean, this is coming out right before Christmas at impulse buy costs, designed to be sold to traditional retailers. Yes, I'm with Andrew 100%. I think this thing will absolutely outsell PSVR.
I agree.
Sony has said launch sales of PSVR is in the many hundreds of thousands.
I believe them,
you think the NES will sell more than many hundreds of thousands in its first
I'm going to buy at least six myself.
I think that it's a hard thing. So the weird thing about NES Classic is that you can't consider worldwide sales because they're launching a Famicom Classic in Japan, so it's like a whole separate, I don't know if they'll just roll those together or how their bet works, but like I feel like if the stock is there, I totally think they could sell 500,000 NES Classics by the end of the year.
Dude, this is the NES Mini totally represents like a future. Like, it's Nintendo's been dipping their toes into nostalgia, playing on. You know, for decades they've been the kids' company. You know, they're the console that 6-year-olds and 8-year-olds get. But they've also had this side business of, you know, us, like 30-year-olds and 40-year-olds are also really into Nintendo. Yeah. Yeah. And I like that they're just jumping into that 30 and 40-year-old demographic with reckless abandon. Like, we're totally going to get an NES Mini 2 that's got, you know,
30 more games.
Yeah, it's got like 50 games on it.
Or an SNES Mini or whatever. Yeah. I mean, I wonder, like, what is a, I don't even know anymore, but I think, like, 24 hours of Call of Duty sales, like, they've hit that million mark, or 24, 48 hours. Yeah. And so I think, like, at $60, like, that's not impossible when stores have it for you to buy. I feel like if PSVR ends the year at 500,000, like, they're doing great. Like, yeah. that's like, a pretty good percentage of the PS4 install base. But, yeah. like, with NES Classic, like, I treat it more like, it is hardware, obviously, but I think of it more as apples to apples with software than I do hardware.
Yeah, and it's the PSVR, I don't want to besmirch it. I love the PSVR. I think it's a fascinating piece of hardware that does incredible stuff, but it's still very expensive. Not expensive relative to its direct competitors, but expensive relative to this. I'm going to caveat my earlier statement. I'd say it'd be Famicom and NES Mini sales together. I want to be clear about that.
Yeah, because they will be big in Japan.
I was living in Japan a few years ago, and it has been a few years, but when I was there, they were capitalizing on the 25th anniversary of Mario with an aggressive marketing campaign, where for a while you could walk into a train station and not see advertisements of some little kid like blowing into a cartridge and playing Super Mario Brothers on his Famicom. And you would just watch people captivated by these screens and caught up by the commercials. And Mario is still part of our DNA. We're not quite old enough yet that he stopped being part of the lifeblood of a couple of generations.
Yeah.
And I do think that that has enormous marketing power when paired with a great price point and an understandable product. People get exactly what this thing is. The Atari Flashback already created an understanding for what this kind of product is. People relate to it, but they have something like, oh, this is a freaking NES. Take
There's also been knockoff ones sold on islands and malls for you know, a decade too. Yeah. So now it's just the official real thing.
Yeah, it's true.
And it's so cute.
I just wish that controller cord was longer.
Yeah. Well, there'll be an extension, I'm sure. This week we have real mail.
Ooh.
Hand delivered by Doug.
Do you have to mail him, Justin? Do you have to write him a physical letter and say, hey, listeners?
Yeah. Yes. He was here for the IGN house party last week. He hand delivered me this message. He says,
I'm not Doug.
Damon, I'm writing you with the hopes that you read this question instead of one from Big Tony Style.
Whoa. Wait, that's not okay.
Well, you gotta make it personal. Yeah.
Dog.
There's some rivalry happening there.
Patty mayonnaise, don't date this man.
Ooh, his question is, do you think that the first game console someone first owned is a good predictor for what consoles they own now? Does the Super Nintendo lead to Wii U? Does PlayStation lead to PS4? Probably, but what about the Genesis people? I'd like the great video game minds of GameScoop to discuss this topic.
Maybe?
Do you mean now next or question. Like historically?
No, yeah, I mean, that's the thing. I think everyone in this room, you know, either started with an Atari or an NES, and now we own every console. So it's hard for me to say, like, you know, the average gamer, the typical gamer. I lean towards no. My sense is that every new console generation is an opportunity for gamers to reevaluate and take stock and jump ship.
Yeah.
Like, I think that the Xbox 360 was the lead console for most Americans, probably. And now I think that the PS4 is probably the lead console for most.
Yeah, I think it's a funny, like, it's a weird, like, if you think of Colin Moriarty, may he rest in peace, like, super NES kid, like, super into Nintendo, and then now diehard PlayStation guy. Like, I don't think, like, I think you're exactly right. I think it kind of switches with the generation.
Thank you, Andrew.
And I think we're old, so we all started with Nintendo and
well,
Atari.
Well, we also own everything.
Yeah, and that's true.
That's the other point I wanted to make, is I've always just had multiple consoles, so for that type of person, this doesn't really apply.
I
can concur with most of what's being said here. I think it really does come. One of the reasons I enjoy console generations is because they give us an opportunity to look at new competing ideas and go, I think this is where I want to go there. We've all crossed the tracks many times or expanded our horizons. Altano likes to point out the fact that console wars are mostly bull anyway, and that while I certainly appreciate the value certain pieces of hardware give me over others, I don't want to say that that's not true. Mostly this idea of some kind of focus on a piece of silicon as something I need to have a religious conviction about is pretty darn
But I think we were actually just talking about this on Beyond Wednesdays on IGN.com, that, like, last generation encouraged that. Like, I do think that, like, more than possibly ever, like, there's always been console exclusives, obviously, but I think, like, that 360 PS3 era felt a little more intense about third parties kind of aligning with one side, and I do think you had to sort of back a single horse, because not everyone can afford to buy both consoles.
Yeah, I guess that is actually a good point. Like, I remember when I was a kid, the rivalry between Sega and Nintendo was fierce.
Yeah.
But I don't remember, like,
that it being that bad between the original Xbox and PlayStation 2.
Yeah.
I don't remember and that GameCube? Really being there. Yeah.
Well, it's like I had a GameCube first, and I was still like, you know, I bought SSX Tricky. I bought a lot of games that appeared on other platforms, and it was fine. Right? Like, yeah. I didn't feel like I was missing out on, you know, I eventually got the other consoles for Halo and yada yada, but I didn't feel like I was missing out on such a gigantic chunk of video games owning a GameCube.
Yeah.
I think this is sort of an underrated aspect of platforms like services like Xbox Live. You have all your friends and you have your achievements, and they, in that sense, they kind of lock you in, or they try to, or they'd like to. Mm-hmm. And that's super real. Like, I don't care that much about achievement points. I don't think there's that many people out there that take it super seriously. But it's crappy to have, like, a trophy level on one platform and achievements on Xbox and achievements on Steam. And I do, just the nerd in me, or the data nerd of the people, like, I like to look at my stats in video games. I'd love to know, like, how many games have I completely mastered across all these platforms?
That's a great point, Justin. You think about the Red Robin wedding arc on South Park, and the whole idea, the reason the kids are fighting in the first place about whether to get PS4 or Xbox One is because they all want to be able to play together. And they're like, well, we all got to get together and buy the same one.
There's that network effect.
So we can all play online together. Like, and then it's like, wait a minute. And that is really important.
It's the legacy of your personal achievements and your profile, and just, you know, you want to be where your friends are.
Yeah.
Like, I bought Overwatch on PS4 because more people in the office were playing on PS4 than Xbox. It had nothing else to do with anything than that.
There are, like, other businesses, like airlines do this a lot, where it's like, if you have gold status on American Airlines, but you come over to United, like, we'll match your elite status and give you 10,000 bonus miles or whatever.
That's
like,
really smart. They should match your achievements.
Like, match your achievements for based on your trophy level.
That's kind of genius.
Yeah.
I've thought for a long time that a startup or some company or business could make a business of unifying all your gamer profiles in one spot.
I mean, like, Raptor and a couple sites have
done
that, but it's not, I don't think it's quite that full level of, because, yeah, it's true. Like, I'll look at, like, PSN profiles lets me, like, drill in and see, like, what percentage of trophies I have in a game, and, like, if I was the first one in the world to platinum it or, like, whatever. Like, you can look at all that ranking. That doesn't exist, as far as I know, for Xbox. Like, Xbox.com actually offers a really good tool for achievements,
but it's not that. Well, there's third parties. Some of that stuff does exist, but it's not unified if you're playing games across multiple platforms.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is one of those where I'm probably an outlier. I could not care less about gamer score trophies or the length of my online genitalia. I don't get that.
Well, no, it's not that I like to see. I don't care. Like, I don't know what my achievement number is or how many platinums I have, but, like, it's just kind of neat. Again, it's just data. Like, I like to go, like, I like to see how long have I played World of Warcraft? How many, you know, how many games have I played? Like,
for me, it's not even about comparing to my friends. It's sort of for me personally, I like knowing what percentage. Like, if I'm really, really into a game, I'll absolutely pursue the platinum because I want to squeeze every inch of everything there is to do out of that game. And it's like, if I just beat the game and I know I'm done with it, but then there are all these extra challenges I can do to get trophies. That's awesome. That's like great icing on the cake for me to have an excuse to play 20 more hours of something I'm done with.
See, I never finish anything. So for me, it's just like, nope, time to move on to the next thing.
It specifically annoys me, tying this back to Skyrim. Like, that's a game I started on Xbox, then switched over to PC. So now I have these two lists of, like, separate achievements.
Yeah.
And, like, I don't know. I didn't care to do Dark Brotherhood a second time. So it remains, like, incomplete on PC, even though I have it on Xbox. And it'd be nice to just bring those together.
Yeah, that's the hard part, is when it's like a really grindy challenge. Like, there are some games like Bioshock Infinite, I got 1,000 out of 1,000 on Xbox and I platinumed and I think I got almost all the Steam achievements. But yeah, I totally hit that by the end. I was like, man, I want to kill 100 floating people again or whatever the hell. Like, I mean, there's a point where, like, you were done grinding things like that out.
Ultimately, Damon, you look for the platform that offers blast processing.
Yep, that's the most important.
That's the one.
That's the most important thing.
Yep. This is Pascal in Jacksonville, Florida.
Ooh. Hey, shout out to Jacksonville, home of Lynyrd Skynyrd.
He says, with news of the Nintendo Switch, I wanted to talk a little bit about console manufacturers. Ever since Microsoft debuted the original Xbox almost 15 years ago, we've only had three companies releasing major home consoles. Nintendo, Sony, and Microsoft have held the market since Sega stopped creating hardware. It seems as if there's only room for three major consoles existing in the market at a time. My question to the panel is as follows. If one of the big three ever drop out of the console race for whatever reason, who do you see potentially jumping in to fill that gap, if any, with the line blurring between PC and home consoles? I could see Valve with their Steam machines making a bigger push for the space in the living room. What do you guys think?
Apple.
Yeah, well...
Wow, that's funny that you went straight to Apple. I went straight to HTC and Oculus. Hmm. Like, I think I can see a world where we end up you know, two generations from now, if VR does take off, if it does lead into what people think it could be, just having some unified box that is like a really powerful PC, but is also a console thing.
Yeah, well, so I wanted to say, Pascal says there's only been three console manufacturers, but even having three is kind of an anomaly, because until Microsoft released the Xbox, the general thinking was there was not room for more than two consoles on the market at the time, because
I mean, I kind of think
so many had attempted Atari Jaguar, 3DO, Neo Geo, Sega Saturn. It's like,
yeah, it was really
these
like
seemed to prove that there wasn't room for a third.
That's a hard one. You always had that third tier outlier. That
kind of
the TurboGrafx survived for a while as a third tier outlier. Yeah, back to the beginning, the Atari 2600, the Intellivision, then the ColecoVision overlapped with those for a while. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You did have space there. I think the moment I think of most of all is that weird period where you had the PlayStation, the N64, and then that Saturn Dreamcast bridge that took place with those there side by side. That almost felt like when it was most viable. In days of yore, but even then, Dreamcast just couldn't survive.
I think it's Wii, 360, PS3.
That's when it finally.
Those are three consoles that were all successful.
I was just disagreeing with the proposition that we never managed to have three. There was always that one that was like struggling to catch up.
I agree with that. I think two is the number. I think there's two that are having a good time and one is that's in rough shape.
Except for
that generation.
Yeah. And for half that generation, the PS3 was getting its butt kicked. We forget about that. It had a tremendous comeback.
It's like with roommates. Whenever there are three roommates, there's always two roommates gang up against the third.
Mm.
Oh. Yep.
Which one are you?
It's true.
I'm probably
the one who gets ganged up.
My wife
up against,
and I gang up on our daughter.
She never pays rent.
It's my wife and the bonsai tree against me.
The question is, if one of the big three dropped out, who could we see stepping in?
Apple.
You're right.
You know, there's a few boxes that you have to tick. They have to be manufacturing hardware now. Mm-hmm. You know, so it's tough. Like everyone's like, yay, yada yada, and I'm like, that's so far outside of like their wheelhouse. It needs to be someone that's shipping a boxed piece of technology to stores now. Otherwise, they'll just never have the infrastructure and the expertise to get a gaming console off the ground. So that automatically limits you to, you know, Samsung, LG,
Amazon
Apple.
Can make one, maybe.
Maybe Amazon or Google.
Anybody making phones. I mean, NVIDIA has the Shield, you know, so NVIDIA could step up.
I mean, I think that's sort of the answer, is that whoever it is, if there was a third one to step up, I don't think it's ever going to be a total no-name startup. I think you're totally right that it would have to be someone established with, not only with just manufacturing pipelines, but even just distribution. I feel like with Ouya, it was such a bottleneck thing where, like, you could back the Kickstarter or buy it directly from them, but, like, I feel like ultimately what hurts a console like that is that you can't walk into any store in the United States and buy it.
Yeah. Now, I can't see it happening in the current environment within this company, but can I also see an IP holding company eventually purchasing a hardware manufacturer or doing something like this? I don't think it's likely. But, you know, 10 years from now, under different directorship and with a different technological landscape, I can see somebody like the Walt Disney Company buying a hardware manufacturer.
There's been those Disney Nintendo rumors for, I mean, they're not rumors, it's just kind of like they feel like they would line up.
Two companies that would fit well together.
I mean, think about, like, AT&T just bought Time Warner. Right. And so Time Warner, underneath all of that, is HBO and CNN, but it's also Batman and the Harry Potter film rights and so
DC
many other
Comics.
Things. DC Comics, exactly. So, like, you're totally right that a company like that is becoming essentially a monopoly, like, as you move forward, like, totally, if they want to get in the hardware business, they have the money. Hmm. I think, like, in video games, it's a little weirder because we think of these, like, we think of EA as a huge company, but, like, and they are, but they're not as cash rich as, like, Time Warner.
Well, they're also
Google.
Not huge because they're not diversified. They're not doing a million things like you know, a Sony is, or, you know, an Activision is owned by Vivendi. Like,
well, and that's the funny thing about Activision. When they were owned by Vivendi, they were one of the rare ones that probably did have the cash that they could have done something like that. But now that they've kind of spun out and bought themselves out of it and have kind of become sort of a freestanding company, like, I feel like they're in the same boat as, like, an EA, where they don't have that, like, not only the investment to buy a hardware maker, but then again to get, like, all of that manufacturing pipeline going.
There's this wonderful fan-made game from a few years ago called Charles Barkley Shut Up and Jam Gaiden, which is an RPG set in a dark dystopian future where the world is ruled by Square Enix Goya. Which is a conglomeration of the Bean Company and Square Enix, and they control the universe.
That's awesome.
I'm kind of hoping for Square Enix Goya.
Yeah, my guess.
All the beads could be shaped like chocobos.
Yeah. Also, there's a lot of really great stuff. And Charles Barkley showed up in jam.
I mean, you think about it. You have to imagine that there's people at Apple. You know, Tim Cook at Apple sees on his App Store every day for years that Minecraft is the top thing on the entire App Store, not just the game section of the App Store. Yeah. It never ever wavers. It's there for life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, you know, there's people asking questions about the video game industry and crunching numbers, trying to figure out if there's something more they can do there within that organization.
Sure. Yeah, I think that even shows with like the way the entertainment business is like slowly creeping back into it. And like, I think there's like there's finally a director on the Uncharted movie. We'll see if it finally happens. But it's like, there's, I think they're waiting for video game movies to become viable. And you see like merchandising, is it like a whole, like I went to a Hot Topic and Marty and I were at a wedding like 4 months ago. And we went to a Hot Topic for the first time in years. And almost everything there is video games.
What does that have to do with the wedding?
Yeah. We were killing time until the wedding.
That's what I was trying to figure out.
He forgot a button-down shirt, so we went to a mall. But we went into that mall, we went to Hot Topic, and all of the merchandise there was Five Nights at Freddy's, it was Crossy Road, it was like all of these things that I would never expect to have merchandising that were not only there, but like nearly sold out, like doing well.
Yeah, Apple is the latest in a long line of companies to sort of back their way into video games without intending to. Facebook is another fairly recent example. They launch a platform, hey, programmers, make whatever you want, make a calendar app, make a reminder app, make an alarm clock, and then it just turns out, they didn't intend it this way, but it turns out all anybody wanted to make and buy were games. Mm-hmm. And then they became a games company, you know, almost against their will. Same with Facebook games. That wasn't really the intention for the Facebook canvas at the time.
Which has created an entirely different culture of video games than the one that we typically talk about here on this couch, that has its own challenges and frustrations and strange marketplace quirks. And because it occurs within a more closed ecosystem, it's much more easily controlled by the development, or by the store-owning community. I mean, Apple controls what they sell. And that makes a huge deal. If you make a game for their platform, they have a kind of an absolute, you're going to get it from us, that's how it's going to be way of doing things.
Well,
it changes the market. I'm not saying that's evil. I'm saying it's different.
It's discoverability, too.
Xbox and PlayStation and Nintendo and Steam and everyone else controls what they sell.
Here's how it's different. If you want a game to be prominently featured on the Apple Store, it's largely based on things that are already popular, rolling over and becoming more popular. Because while they do have an editorial staff that tries to rise some quality products to the top, a lot of what flourishes on that store flourishes because of hits, because of attention. And that allows some market manipulation in ways that works very differently than what's possible in our industry to take place.
I don't think I'm with you on that. I mean, we don't need to get into it right now, but maybe for a future scoop, I disagree.
Like, that's probably a lot.
I think they do an excellent job of spotlighting, you know, a balance of, you know, Plants vs. Zombies and new, weird, strange games.
But I think
they do a much better job of it than Xbox does.
I agree with, but the volume of iOS games versus Xbox games, there are hundreds of thousands of iOS games and 16 of them get featured.
Yeah.
Whereas
on
Xbox, there are maybe 250 games at any given time and 16 of them get featured.
I think people bag on the App Store all the time, but if you look at, you know, those top charts or the featured charts, it's always going to be a pretty even mix of interesting experimental stuff and sort of, you know, the Angry Birds.
I think the curators in many ways do a good job, but I think a better way, for more of what I'm talking about here, Sean Baby wrote an article recently about the game that he produced for the App Store. Go find that. I think it's on Cracked. It was published, I think, last week.
He writes for Cracked.
But it talks about what it's like trying to get a game marketed in the mobile space, and how vastly different it is in the way you and I think about it, and some of the kind of nasty stuff that goes into it. I really recommend you read that.
I mean, that's why I think we have such a hard time covering mobile games, too, is that like it is a discoverability problem. Like, when there are that many games, like if we had 10 times the staff, we still couldn't cover all of those games, and part of it is finding the hidden gems, and I think like it's an impossible task. Like, I don't know how Apple even elevates as many as they do, because I think you're right that there are like some no names in there that make their way to the top.
They hire a bunch of old IGN editors.
they have a staff dedicated to that, who does, again, it does a wonderful job. This isn't a criticism of that. It's more the vast process and how there's an unmanageable system.
There's some shenanigans with, you know, if your game is at the top of the charts, it'll get more downloads, which keeps it at the top of the charts, and you can goose your way through artificial means to the top of the charts. So you can spend $10,000 to get however many fake downloads and hope that getting to the number four spot with your $10,000 makes you more than that amount of money in return. Some of that's certainly true. I don't know if that's any different than manipulation of the Steam charts or anything else, though.
I like goose as a verb a lot.
Yeah.
I feel like that's not one you hear a lot.
Yeah, goose. I'll give you a little goose.
Oh my goodness. Goose? But now you're seeing it now.
Goose means something. Goose means something different in an 80s teen comedy.
Or also he's the Rio for Maverick.
Yeah, that's true.
Are there other animal verbs? I'm gonna cow you later.
Cowing, absolutely. That's a verb.
Oh no.
To be cowed is to be like to be lionized, to be made frightened.
That's another animal verb.
Oh my gosh! Ah! To be cowed and to be lionized is the same thing. That's really weird.
Well, no, they do say lions.
Don't turn turkey on me now, Jared.
Oh, gobble gobble.
Lions are the cows of the savannah.
Oh, duck? There's a duck. Lions are the cows of the savannah. Actually, cows are the cows of the savannah because there's lions.
Okay, Jared. Yeah. All right. Now's the time on GameScoop when we play video game 20 questions.
Uh-oh.
Our suggestion this week comes from Keenan McClelland.
Ooh.
McClelland? Like with a D at the end?
McClelland, yes. And Justin did remember to bring his suggested first questions. And also Jared has been doing some training to hopefully perform better on video
games. Okay, well, you're both way better prepared than I am.
These come from Dougzer.
Yeah.
And it's been a long-running joke that he sent us this thoughtful list of first questions that I consistently forget and leave on my desk. And then someone tweeted me a GIF this morning, an animated GIF that said, Justin, don't forget the questions.
Yeah, and then he did forget them, but I reminded him.
Well, you didn't need to.
You're such a gracious host.
You didn't.
You really goosed him on that.
Yeah.
Okay, let the questioning begin.
Do you play as more than one character in this game?
No.
All right.
It's not GTA, guys.
All right, there we go. It's not a fighting game. It's not GTA. That's a good question.
I know. I was like the year one. Can I do the year one?
You do, of course you do the year one. Yeah, yeah.
So what is it? Is it before January 1st, 2000? Is that
right? Usually you want. After. You can do what you want. Yours.
Was it released after January 1st, 2000?
Yes.
Ah, ooh, there we
it's
go.
It's GTA.
All right. Let's see. Is this... was this game released for the PS3, Wii, Xbox 360 generation?
No.
Okay.
Hmm. Yeah, but I don't like that because now it splits. It could have been earlier or later.
I know. It was probably a bad choice.
Is this game released in the same era as PS4, Xbox One, Wii U?
No.
All right. Well,
so it is earlier.
Okay.
So late-ish PS2
so
game.
Either very end of even like
Dreamcast.
End of 64 theoretically.
No,
right?
Wait. I take it back. Not late-ish. When did the PS2 came out? 2001.
Yeah.
Dreamcast 2001.
No, Dreamcast 99.
Yeah. Oh,
but
yeah,
Dreamcast, PS2, GameCube,
original Xbox,
PC, and GBA.
And not necessarily tail end of those.
Yeah, portable.
No, those consoles didn't come out until like 2002, so it's that entire console generation, in fact.
But like portables are what mix it up. Because he's right that like GBA's in there.
Yeah.
Is this you know, commonly thought of or considered as a portable game?
No.
Okay.
All right.
So
well,
all right, great. Probably not an arcade game from that period. Let's see. Do we want to do genre? Do we want to genre's often a
we could
to
do
us.
We could do company, like we could eliminate Nintendo or Microsoft. Like,
or if you do that, you want to go oceans first.
So I'll do exclusive. Is it a console exclusive?
No.
Okay. Not a console exclusive. Excellent. Very exciting. A lot of games made during that period of time. All right.
We know nothing.
Yeah.
We know nothing. I'm not completely positive on whether it's an N64 or PS1 game.
Yep.
Probably not. Probably a PS2 game. Not
was
a
this game? I can't remember if it's available on a disc or a cartridge.
Well, there's very few cartridges.
It's also not a yes or no question.
So yeah,
it's not a cartridge game because we know it's not handheld. That would only give us N64.
Which barely survived.
Yeah, there's like three games. Yeah.
Okay. Let's try genre. Is this game experience from first person?
No.
Okay.
Is this? I don't got it.
So it's.
Do you play as a person?
Yes.
Huh? A human being.
You're not a ship.
Not a ship.
Mm-hmm.
You're human. That's useful, definitely. All right. So you're a person. That's not a first-person shooter.
I'm trying to think of one of the system that would bridge the most gaps.
Look, if we narrow it, we're already what, seven questions, eight questions in.
Eight questions in.
And we know the era. We know it's not exclusive. So let's not focus on system. Maybe
harness your training, Jared.
Harness the training. That's what I'm trying to do. I'm saying we don't want to get caught up on figuring out the system if it's not a console exclusive. So this could be on PC. This could be. You could ask about controls.
I thought it said a rub on.
You don't play multiple characters. That's actually very helpful. It's not like an RTS because in an RTS you'd be playing multiple characters.
Does this game have punching and kicking?
Hmm. I don't think so. If it does, like, that's not a major mechanic at all.
Okay. Punching and kicking.
And you are playing as a person?
Yeah. You play as a person.
Play as a person.
Third person.
Third person.
No punching and kicking.
Yeah.
And you only play as that one character, so that eliminates, like, RPGs and stuff.
Yeah,
like,
it eliminates most of the RPGs. It eliminates fighting games. It eliminates RTSs, or almost all RTSs.
So if you're not punching or kicking, you're probably either platforming or shooting.
Yeah.
Or, wait, I mean,
there's only so much vocabulary.
Or, wait, there's also, what about Pikmin? Like, you're one guy, you're Olimar.
Yeah.
You're moving stuff around. It's the right period of time.
No, but it's not an exclusive.
Ah, it's an exclusive. That's right. Yeah.
Is this a shooty game?
Yes.
Third person shooty game.
That's 10.
Third or 2D. Third person or 2D shooting game.
So you know the time period it's in.
Yeah.
You know.
Early 2000s.
You play as a person.
Yeah.
In third person. Yeah. It's a shooty game.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Not an exclusive.
Not
a console exclusive.
That could be.
And it's theoretically before 2005. Yeah. Because.
And it's not a portable.
Yeah.
It's not a port. Could be Resident Evil. Let's see.
Could be Resident Evil.
Yeah, it could be Resident Evil.
Is this a Japanese-developed video game?
No.
Okay, so that's that.
dang.
Yeah.
It's all Konami, that's all Capcom.
Just killed like nine of my questions.
No, that's great, though, because now we know it's American or European developed.
But also Resident Evil is in the 90s. I mean, unless it's one. Unless it's Resident Evil Veronica.
Well, like, Resident 4.
Yeah. Four.
Yeah.
Is an influential, not first-person shooty type game. For
trying to think of third-person shooters on like Dreamcast.
I'm trying to think
of a lot of stuff.
Really well-known multi-platform games of the era. Because I'm like, Metroid Prime. Although that's first-person.
Right.
But
exactly.
I mean, they're all everything I can think of. It's like Halo. They're all exclusive.
Well, this could be something that was on PC. And
Halo did get a port, but I don't think Damon would do that to us. He wouldn't do us.
But that's also a first-person game.
Yeah, I know, but I'm just saying.
Yeah.
Like,
it's a third-person game with shooting. You're not punching and kicking, so it's not Fallout, because you punch and kick people in Fallout.
Virtua Cop. First-person. I can only picture first-person games
me too.
For some reason.
Yeah. Third-person. I can only think of Fallout. Console exclusives. It's driving me crazy.
Fallout's wrong.
Next question. Remember, Jared, the podcast listeners cannot see you.
You know, I don't want to...
They're just...
Is this game...
Oh, we could ask about it being scary. We could ask about like more. We could get more genre.
Let's try and get more genre focus.
More genre focus.
I feel like that would help.
Yeah. Is this game spooky? Is it a spooky game?
Yes.
Ah, there we go. There we go. That helps a lot.
Silent.
Okay, so Silent Hill. There's the firearms. But okay, so what's the spooky American game?
Spooky American game.
Where's Chloe? Someone text Chloe.
Phone a friend. We'll use our lifeline, David.
All right. So it's not Silent Hill.
I actually never said it was American made.
You said it was not Japanese.
Oh, it could be European.
Oh, European.
Just to clarify.
Or any other. It's not like the only place it's not Earth.
Some other
Japan,
far
America.
Off land.
Yeah.
One of those far.
Brazil!
Brazil! That would have been helpful at.
Man,
at
I really think about Japanese, you know, at
spooky
least
games.
As the horror game masters.
Let's see. Yeah. We have. What's Amnesia Japanese? Amnesia comes to mind. That's
Amnesia's
wrong
first person.
Yeah.
That's my first person. We just made a list of these.
You killing zombies in this game?
No.
No zombies.
Mm. Were zombies a big thing in 2000?
I remember Resident Evil.
Fatal Frame is Japanese.
Oh, it's knockoffs.
I'm thinking of the wrong area. Spooky. What's spooky? We've probably
Alien.
All played this. Oh yeah, there is Alien.
Ooh, Alien. Yeah.
But I don't know what ones there was at that time.
I mean, I'm thinking of third-person shooter. Could this not be like a side scroller?
Yeah, it could be.
Like, let's see. Like I think I'm maybe thinking.
It's like
too.
It's like Oddworld and stuff.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
Oddworld Stranger's Wrath was like maybe.
Yeah, but that's
that
not really
time.
Stranger's Wrath's not really spooky.
No, but that's the type of game that we could be.
No, I wasn't meaning to be critical. It was just...
Well, I felt very attacked.
We've got what we need now. We got a spooky game from that period.
Do we? Jared feels very confident.
Yeah, we got.
Jared's ready to go.
No, we've got what we need.
You're not shooting zombies though. So what are you shooting?
Yeah,
that's another thing. What dinosaurs? Ghosts? What's scary? What dinosaurs? Ghosts? Monsters? Hacking, slashing things.
Debt.
What's that? Debt. Debt is frightening.
That's incredibly scary. Relationships.
I feel like this is looking
something
being vulnerable
in our faces here. We could ask about PC, but I don't know if we want to. We asked about console, but I don't think we should. That's a wasted question. Let's think about interface control. Ooh.
Does this game have a jump button?
I cannot answer really that. I can't answer that question.
So does that mean we kill that question?
Okay.
Yeah, it does.
That question doesn't count.
It doesn't count.
All right, so the way we stall time is by saying, is there a jump button over and over again?
Yep, that's good.
Yo, but let's go back to that jump button.
You play as one person.
Oh, so that eliminates Resident
there's
Evil,
gun,
actually.
Yeah, there's you play as one, well, RE4.
Well, that's RE, because it's not Japanese dev.
So yeah, we know it's not survival horror.
Ooh, I like that one, actually. Well, no, never mind. That wouldn't help me eliminate it much.
It's too late to
do you think it would, like, real-time versus turn-based, or, like, how you play the game, or, like, mechanical genre a little bit, like perspective? We don't really know the perspective.
So we should think about, is
first
it...
First person, yeah.
Yeah, should we ask if it's side-scrolling?
Is this game played from a 2D perspective?
No.
Okay, so...
3D, third-person game. Mm-hmm.
Spooky...
Tomb Raider?
Oh, I've got it.
Spooky multi-platform
shooter. It's Eternal Darkness, I'll bet. We're not asking Damon that yet, but I'll bet you it's Eternal Darkness. It's not developed. It's developed in Canada. It fits the genre. It fits the time period.
Was it multi-platform?
It was.
It was a GameCube exclusive, wasn't it?
Exclusive, wasn't it? Jeez, wait a minute. Or did it come out someplace else later? No, I think it was only GameCube.
All right, I'm trying to think of third-person games other than like Tomb Raider and Resident Evil that were out around that time.
Do you mind if I don't want to burn a question, but I want to ask a lot.
You did all the training, dude. You should burn every question.
Sure.
All
right. Does this game have mystical themes to it?
No.
Okay, so it's not magic and monsters and shit like that. All right.
That's 15. So.
That's 15.
Spooky, but not mystical.
Why do we never win anymore? What the hell happened?
No,
we used to win every week. This.
You need Sam Clutch Claiborne.
Yeah,
we do need Sam Clutch Claiborne.
He's yeah, that's like extra. This is the point of the show where I would normally give up, but
yeah, but yeah. This time period is not Sam's strong.
That's true, actually.
Yeah, that's
true. Yeah, I gotta. Okay, that's.
I played a lot of games around this time.
I feel like that's what I'm missing now. Is I need to send myself back to like okay, I'm 16, 17 years old.
High school Justin Davis. You're fending off all the women. You're just drinking after school.
Stay away, ladies.
Go home. Sit down. In front of a console, and what are you playing?
Super Monkey Ball.
Why are you smoking a cigarette?
Okay, it's not. It's
Wind Waker.
Yeah.
It's too late for Phantasmagoria.
That's not Phantasmagoria, yeah, dude.
Could it be Tomb Raider? I keep saying Tomb Raider. Could it be Tomb Raider?
But how spooky is Tomb Raider?
Tomb Raider's not spooky.
I think caves are very spooky.
Yeah, I do think it'd be the nice to know. Like, I wish I knew more about the vocabulary of how you interact with the game. Like, is it only shooting, or is it puzzly, or is it?
Well, you could ask one.
You could ask you five questions.
Okay, do you solve puzzles in this game?
I'm not going to answer that one. I can't say definitively.
Okay. Yeah, that's hard.
Is there
a jump button? Yeah.
Do you want to ask about how it was received? Like,
no. They were always well received.
Yeah.
Well, actually, we've had it.
I feel like if it's on this list,
we've had some crappy ones.
Yeah. Okay. We did Jaws recently.
All right. So what do we?
We could ask about license.
Should we ask about? Oh, is it a licensed game? That's not a bad idea.
We've done it, but that's. Or
could we ask? Is this franchise still active today? Could we do that? Is this a franchise that there's still new games in today? Can I ask that? I don't know. You did all the training. I'm very nervous.
Okay, that usually gets us in trouble, but I'm starting to get desperate here.
All right. Is this a franchise that is still active today?
What do you mean by still active today?
Are games still coming out in this franchise? Or has there been a game in this franchise in the PS4, Xbox One generation?
No.
Didn't really help that much.
No. No.
I mean, it kind of does, because it eliminates like all that games stuff, that got big sequels. Yeah.
Four questions left.
I feel like this is, it's not Afraid of the Dark, or Alone in the Dark.
Third-person spooky shooter from
the early
2000s.
It's not Japanese.
Multi-platform. You play as a person, one person.
But it's not first person.
I'm trying to think about something like Evil Within, like a Resident Evil-y knockoff,
American or European.
Yeah, I keep thinking of the things like Carrier. I thought we had it with Eternal.
I don't know if Damo's
no magic. No
trying
zombies.
To be clear, or if it was a hint to think beyond America.
Yeah,
but what are European studios? That were
it doing? Could be either. Is this here? Damon could be trying to help us, or it just is an American studio, and he's just throwing mud in the water.
You mentioned Tomb Raider. What else was Eidos doing around then?
I don't know. Nothing.
Was anything going on? No, because it couldn't be like Hitman.
Because, it's not a. It's the fact that it's not a first because there were things in first person that would fit too, but.
Wow. The fact that there's no entries now feels like that should...
The fact that it's not mystical eliminates any of the kind of early RPG. Lends me to think that it's not a spooky RPG or, like, you know, any numbers-based
So there's
game.
No zombie... Oh, wait, what about... Did Grasshopper do anything spooky around that?
They're Japanese.
That's Japanese again. Yeah. I keep going to... Man.
Nobody does spooky outside of Japan.
Yeah, what's wrong?
Japan's the spookiest place on Earth.
They are pretty spooky. We could try for license, but I wonder if we're...
I don't even know if that would help me at this point, though.
I don't know.
Can I go to a bar?
Let's see.
In the game or just now?
Shooting. Either.
What would you be shooting if you're not shooting... When did Condemned come out? Was that 360?
Condemned or Fear? Fear's first person.
Yeah.
Condemned is also first
And those are also
person.
Later,
Condemned,
I think.
Yeah, I think
well,
right.
this would be a 360 launch game.
So PS3 was 2006, so Xbox 2005. So this is between, theoretically, 2000 and 2005.
Mm-hmm. Right. It's most likely a GameCube PS2 original Xbox game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We could ask if it was available on one of those. I mean, PS2, everything was on. But
this, I don't know. I want to know more about what you're shooting. Are you fighting? Are you? It's the primarily you. You got a lot of ghosts in this game. They're ghosts.
No ghosts.
I would.
No.
Say,
what do you mean? No. Why?
Do you shoot other humans? This is the question I would say because that could be a military game instead.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or robots. Robots are evil. Or aliens.
Aliens. Yeah, I screwed up.
Yeah, that's okay. It's all right. You want to ask about sci-fi? Themes?
Three questions left.
Is this a sci-fi theme game? This.
Yes.
Okay.
Whoa, that's a really big hint.
Yeah, it's really
But
big.
It's not like System Shock or anything like that, because it was first person. I mean, it's something like that. What other spooky space station games are there?
Yeah, I'm wondering if I didn't play this. I'm starting to be like, oh crap, what if this is one of my blind spots?
Two questions left. One,
sounds like something that would have been on PC.
We should use these for
this
guesses.
Is such a PC
well,
sound.
One,
you only get one guess.
You only get 20 questions total.
So. Yeah. Was that that's Dead Space is two, no
and that's 360.
Yeah, that's 360. That's later, I thought about Dead Space, but that's
Dead
that's
Space
later.
Is a little too late, but that's a good guess.
Good guess, John.
Good guess, God.
Yeah. Wow. His voice coming out of there. Sci-fi thing. I mean, we talked about the Alien franchise. It could be.
I mean, should we?
What about no? AVP was. Oh wait, there was the reissue of AVP in 2000.
Damon wouldn't do us like.
And that's
that.
A first-person shooter again. That doesn't work. That's first-person.
There are like no third-person games.
Now, there is, and we're going to feel so.
Ape Escape.
We got to number 20, and Damon's like, I just made this game up. It's called Shooty Science.
It's not Descent. It's first person. It's not. Oh! Thinking about when I played this. I played Quake Team Fortress. I played all the Lord. What's this?
Jared's gone into the wizard state.
I feel like Jared's going to step out of it. It's going to be pitch black in here. Someone's going sweeping the floor.
Wait, you said pitch black. When did Riddick come out? When did Riddick come out?
No, was that original Xbox?
Riddick was first person.
Riddick was first person. Yep, you're right. That doesn't work.
I give up.
You can ask one more question to get a detail.
Let's try to narrow it down. We know it's a sci-fi game.
Yep, in third person.
We could ask, if it's licensed. Do you want to try?
Yeah.
Is it a licensed game?
Yes.
Okay, we have to get this. We have everything we need.
I don't think we're gonna get it. It is a licensed... third-person shooter from the early 2000s.
Sci-fi, no ghosts.
Sci-fi themed.
No ghosts, no zombies.
Not an exclusive.
What happens? What are scary things that happen on other planets? Let's just talk. Okay, so.
Why do you think it has to be another planet?
I don't know, because it's sci-fi, but it could be not.
Could be future on our planet.
Yeah, it could be. Let's talk about movies that came out around that time and TV shows. And I mean, there's The Matrix. It's not that, because that's not spooky.
Battlestar Galactica, Lost.
Galactica, Lost.
it's Lost via... No, because that was 360. Lost via Domus.
We talked about Riddick, but Riddick's first person. Yeah. Otherwise, and there's you punch people in Riddick.
Event Horizon was around then.
Oh, there was Event Horizon.
Jeez. I hope he's just describing Event Horizon.
Huh?
Maybe yes.
The movie.
This is the rare film category.
It was on everything. You shot guns at space creatures.
Describing the whole game.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, this could be an alien game. That's the thing that keeps coming to mind. Or a Predator. Was there a Predator game around this period?
I don't know.
All right, if we're not going to get there.
I give up.
I can reveal the game.
All right, reveal it. What we got?
You're not going to guess?
I'm going to say it's an alien game.
It is an alien game.
Yeah.
Released in 2002.
Okay.
Developed by Computer Artworks, which is no longer in business. Published by Black Label Games, which is no longer in business. For PS2, Xbox, PC, single player, licensed game. It was a commercial success, got good reviews. The Thing.
Oh,
weird.
First off, giving that piece of crap good reviews.
Hey, got good reviews.
A crime against humanity.
IGN gave it an 8.5.
I don't think I've ever seen the Thing game.
Okay, the Thing game misses the point of the Thing. So this makes me mad because I played this.
It's a sequel to the movie.
Yeah. Okay.
It takes place after the movie.
Yeah. So the Thing game misses the point because the Thing is all about paranoia, but in the Thing game, they try to make it about paranoia. Except you can have a guy in your sights the whole time, test him, and then keep him in your sight. And then later on, like, the alien jumps out of him. Yeah. Like, he turns out to be the monster. It missed the point of not trusting
The game people. Was kind of busted where it was scripted for characters. You've seen the movie?
Oh, yeah.
So it was scripted so that characters would, you know, the monster would burst out of them, you know, 4 hours into the game or 6 hours into the game.
Yeah.
But Jared's right, where you could test them and then they would not be infected until... You know, the moment where they're supposed to become infected, suddenly they're infected.
Yeah.
The best thing about the Thing is the super old, like, before even the Carpenter movie we talk about, there's the super old Thing from another Earth, or Thing from another world, or whatever, and there's this moment where the alien comes, and it makes a loud noise, and all the people fall to the ground, but there wasn't actually a loud noise, so there's a dog that's just sitting there, like, it just doesn't react.
I just watched the Thing for, like, the 600th time about a week ago.
Did you see the theory about the end of the movie, where he's taking a swig from
the
rest?
Yeah, so he's drinking the gasoline, maybe?
Man, do you not know this?
I mean, I saw he drinks whiskey.
No, there's the two guys left alive. There's Kurt Russell and what's his name?
Goliath.
And he's
Goliath?
The guy that does the voice for Goliath. Okay. I forget his name.
And
Keith something?
Keith David.
They killed the Thing by throwing the Molotov cocktails at him, and then he takes a swig of the whiskey and gives it to the other guy, and he takes a swig of the whiskey. And the theory is that that's not whiskey, that's another Molotov cocktail, and Kurt Russell is testing... It's testing him, and he doesn't know. Like, he doesn't know what whiskey's supposed to taste like or what it's supposed to do, because he's infected, and he takes a drink of it. And then the movie ends with Kurt Russell knowing that he's infected too.
Doesn't Kurt Russell drinks from it too? So he's gasoline.
Testing. He's testing.
He doesn't even like react to it.
No, he's testing. He's doing it deliberately. Okay, he's taking a swig of the gasoline, saying, "Here, you have some."
It's a fun fan theory. I prefer that movie ending ambiguously. I love the idea that it's just kind of like, well, we're too tired to deal with this crap anymore. Let's just die.
Also, I like the idea of drinking gasoline as like a Pop Rocks and Coke thing where it's just like, you just like burp fire.
And there's other clues, like that's summing up, like you see him, you know, that guy leaves and comes back at one point.
He does
like
disappear.
I don't even really think it's a fan. I think it's crazy plausible that that's like real.
We had the tools to pick that game out, but I think the game was so forgettable that I mean we had all the right info and we worked it.
I thought maybe you would guess that I would pick a Halloween-themed game.
Oh, that's true.
This week.
See, I'm not even that smart. I was like, why is Polygon doing a Let's Play of PT? And Marty was like, it's Halloween weekend, you idiot.
And you have made no secret of your love of the Thing in many conversations.
Yeah. If we would have landed on licensed earlier, we could have been like movie license or long-running brand.
I think is it licensed is a really good, that's a really good like around 9 or 10 question because I feel like you've already narrowed down.
Yeah. Honestly, I feel like our line of questioning this time was stronger than it's been in weeks. Like, we were at the right spot, we just didn't land on the property.
Well,
I am happy that we bookended this show by talking about weird fan theories.
That's true.
From Bruce Wayne to
I
the
like
Thing.
That symmetry.
Yes, same.
I wanted you to ask if you are shooting aliens in the game, which is true, but then you would have got caught up thinking about Alien, the actual movie Aliens.
Yeah, that would have been, oh, man.
And I don't remember if you can punch and kick in the game.
I don't remember.
And there's probably light puzzle solving, but I don't really remember that being part of the game. But anyway.
Yep.
I think we all learned a lot today.
I think we did.
We had fun. We had a good time.
We had fun, and that's what really matters.
Yeah. I agree.
Also that the audience had fun.
Yeah. Yep.
We hope.
I hope you did have fun. That is all the scoops that we have for you this week. Remember, you can always reach us at the email address, gamescoop@IGN.com. Thank you, Justin. Thank you, Andrew. Thank you, Jared. My name is Damon. This is IGN Gamescoop, and we're out. It was
Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Burntwine, erstwhile monk turned traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Burntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.